It's time for another expert guest mashup, and this time it's how to optimize your tech stack.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring episodes. And if you're tuning in for the very first time, because I know a lot of people do for these episodes, awesome to have you joining us. I hope you'll find this a brilliant podcast to be following. And of course, to all of you who listen all the time, I hope you love this too. In this one, I'm asking seven e-commerce tech specialists for their answer to this question. What is your top tip for tech stack optimization in 2024? Tech stack optimization, but what's that, I hear you cry? Well, it's how you can get more out of your tech stack, from your website to your marketing tools to your back-end systems to the tools you use behind the scenes to keep your team organized. The wrong tools, or the right tools used in the wrong way, can cost you a lot of money, time, energy, and let's face it, your sanity. Plus, they lead to bad customer experience, which affects your sales as well. Know the pain of the wrong tools? Yes, I think we all do. This year, I suspect you're being asked to do more with less. So you're going to love this episode, which is essentially all about helping you do just that. My seven guests have some brilliant advice to share with you, and we're going to start hearing from them very shortly. Before we get started, though, I just want to tell you about a podcast I've been enjoying recently. It's called Upflip. Do you want to peek behind the curtain to see how profitable businesses start, grow and run? Then you should listen to the Upflip podcast, a show that uncovers how great businesses are built and how others can replicate that success. Each episode features a real-world business owner or expert who shares their story, strategies and advice. Listen to the Upflip podcast today to learn actionable insights to start or grow your business. Okay. Here we go. And remember, please, please, please do listen to the end of this episode so you don't miss out on any of the tech stack optimization advice of any of my guests. Plus, right at the end, I'll be sharing my own take on everything shared in this episode. It's time to hear from our first tech stack optimization guest. Let's kick things off with Rachel Jones from Studio Rotate. So Rachel, what's your top tip for tech stack optimization in 2024?
So tech stack means quite a lot of different things to different people. I put out the question to the entire team here at Rotate, and the different answers that came back from the different verticals within the business just kind of really shone a light on that. So to the developers, there were various kind of technical heavy answers focused around optimizing front-end and back-end technologies. And then the product team and the strategists were focused more on combination of tools and platforms and how they work together. So in the interest of time, I thought, let's look at one top tip from each end of that spectrum, so to speak. So the first one with a bit more of a engineering focus was around outsourcing as much as possible that is not a business USP. Some of the examples that they highlighted were around optimizing a tech stack with a tier two hosting company. So looking at Edgio, Netlify, Vercel, and having an enterprise SLA with those companies rather than a tier one host where you're having to manage more yourself. And this allows for more time for those within the business to focus on higher value work. And outsourcing to specialists who can purely focus on a very specific part of the stack also results in greater and clearer accountability and maintainability. For example, with a tier two host partner, then if there's a hosting issue on Christmas Day, they're the ones that will need to have a team in place to resolve it. If it's in the business, then you're having to have the accountability and make a provision for that. And I think this is true of other areas of the stack too. Where can you hand over the accountability and maintainability to specialists to optimize the in-house team that you have, as well as the stack itself? And then our second tip, and I think this is really relevant to 2024, it's do an audit. It's a big year for a reset. There's so much that's happened in the e-commerce space, particularly the last 5 years. It's entirely different to 2019. I think we look at three big C's here to help look at the entire tech stack. The first is cost, vendor fees, third-party fees, payment fees, dev costs, support, maintenance, future upgrades. There's going to be opportunities for cost savings. And this auditing is also going to highlight areas that maybe need reinvestment for this next phase of D2C. Also, compatibility. Are you actually even using some of the Shopify apps that you signed up to when it was a very different market in 2018? Do you have the best CRM partner for your business now? How many scripts are you running on site? Are they even delivering any value? And finally, the third C is convenience, or for a better term, ease of use, which again covers quite a lot, but tech is moving so quickly. We've got developers here who are creating far quicker using a framework such as Astro, or brand side using AI. I didn't think I would mention it, but here we are, to really help with the speed of content upload. This is something that, you know, how convenient is your tech stack? It's worth auditing. And we think that now is a great time to really do that. So yeah, outsource to specialists and prioritize an audit.
All good optimization plans start with an audit. You've got to work out what you want to optimize and why you want to optimize it before you can start. And tech stack optimization is no different. Let's build on that with the brilliant James Gerd, director at Digital Juggler and co-host of the Replatform podcast.
Okay, so here's my advice. I'm going to split it into three parts just to be greedy. Number one is be clear on what issues that you have that you are trying to fix with technology before you commit to new technology. People change their technology stack all the time, and with change comes potential risk and the potential to introduce new issues. So you've got to be certain that the issue you're trying to fix or the opportunity you're trying to tap into is defined by the platform choice, rather than it being down to an existing business process that's not fit for purpose or not having the right people to execute and use tools correctly. And I've worked in projects where actually the technology is pretty good, but it's either been poorly implemented or people are not using the capability effectively and not leveraging the full value of the license. So replatforming can't solve all issues. Don't change unless you're sure tech is the enabler of the improvement or the cause of the problem. My second bit of advice is set clear criteria for build versus buy. So one of the big decisions around tech stack evolution is, do we build it ourselves? You know, if we're on an open source platform, do we get our developers to extend it? Do we buy in specialist third-party software? I know some businesses who are very anti paper third-party licenses and want to build it all themselves, but development cycles to build full mature capabilities for things like whether it's search, merchandising, loyalty, whatever, that's an expensive play to get beyond very, very basic MVP. Then you've evolution to composable strategy, focus on using the best tools for each component part of your tech stack, not one vendor to rule them all, and only building where you have a clear competitive advantage. But we've got to get a balance. New tools bring additional license fees, integration costs, and support maintenance effort, which therefore adds potential risk. You've got to find the right balance between where there is a clear business case for building yourself that gives you competitive advantage versus it's speedier and more cost-effective to introduce a new capability via a dedicated, proven, market-leading third party. I'll give you an example. Site search is a classic one where I've recently been helping people to bring in a third-party specialist like a Klaviyo rather than trying to build out their own search capability off of a native feature or an open AI. My final one is build accessibility and performance assessment into all tech changes. This is huge and it's often overlooked. Just take the UK alone. There are 2 million plus people with sight loss. Estimate is around 15 to 20% of us are neurodivergent. Now, these people have specific needs for how they use, how they access, and therefore a browser and a site to get information and also to execute tasks. Not all sites think of through accessibility and do proper accessibility audits and make sure their site is A, compliant with the law, protecting them from potential heavy fines, but B, is delivering the right customer service. Now, this isn't just about fine avoidance, it's about good customer experience and economics. If you're excluding millions of people because your site hasn't thought through what they need to in order for it to be accessible, then you're letting your customers down and you're hampering your business growth. Retrospectively fixing tech stacks for accessibility and performance is bloody expensive. Get the expertise in from the start, make better decisions before you implement technology. I hope that's been useful.
James, well, I don't consider it at all greedy for you to give us three top tips because they're brilliant, super useful. So his tips were, one, what are you trying to fix? Two, should you build or buy? Is it worth buying off the shelf to get 90% of what you want instead of investing in creating it yourself? Accessibility is number three. Quite frankly, it's amazing how little we talk about that. So I'm really pleased James added it in. With accessibility, James started to give us some insight into the tech trends of the moment, aka the types of tools that are making the most impact. And James also mentioned Klaviyo. So with more tech trends advice, and given she works for Klaviyo, it'd be kind of crazy not to go to Rachel Tonner from Klaviyo next, who I'm especially pleased to be learning from here, as she, like me, is one of Dark Matter's 24 top e-commerce voices for 2024. Don't worry, we'll be talking a bit more about auditing and working out what to do a little later on. Anyway, here's Rachel's top tech stack optimization advice for you.
So retailers that I speak to are in one of two camps with tech stack optimization. One is they are not doing big investments and they're looking for how they can better utilize their current tech stack. Or two, they are going into investments to help them optimize their tech stack now and also in the future. I'm going to focus on the first one here because I do think there's some really quick wins that will have a great impact on customer experience. One of those things is having product reviews on your website. So if you don't have a product review tool yet, definitely invest in one. And also make sure that on the front end of your website, your reviews are visible. So not only on the product detail page, but also in the quick search. When you search for something, the products come up, you can see the stars, you can see the number of reviews. Also within the product listing pages and the search results landing pages. Customers are more and more, you know, buying stuff off TikTok, you know, they're going to new websites, they're willing to make purchases as long as they see that social proof there. Secondly, personalization is always a massive word, massive concept. But if you're not really doing much personalization now, look at your tech stack and see if there's ways that you can have some quick wins. Like, for example, connecting whatever you use for CRM or email and SMS marketing, maybe connecting that somehow to your website. Get some data from your website to come into there and also use data within your CRM to dynamically change parts of your website. The best advice here is just to look at your existing tech stack, see which products have integrations with each other. You can just do a quick Google of, you know, product name and product name integration. You can figure out what is already available from within your existing tech stack and just get started and get started in a way that's manageable for you.
Love that. Key trends and practical advice. Thank you so much, Rachel. And for anyone getting confused, that is now our full quota of Rachels for this episode. We've had two Rachels. We will not be having any more Rachels. Right, next up, let's hear the advice of Deepak Anand from Shopline, who's going deep into the point James Gerd raised about building or buying your tech.
My view is, in 2024, a lot of retailers would be looking at composable SaaS. What I actually mean is that they would be looking at the benefits of SaaS, where they would be lower total cost of ownership and also less tech debt. But at the same time, they would be looking at modularity, which means is that they want to make sure that there are components that can talk to each other without impacting the entire system. So the best example I give it to a lot of retailers are there are three type of houses. Either you can go into the leasehold, freehold, or share of freehold. So there are benefits of each houses or the flats. So when you take a leasehold flat, which is all about that you can just move in without making any changes to the flat. And the second one is a freehold house where you would be able to move in and you would be able to make changes as you like. And then the share of freehold is that you own a certain part of it, right? What exactly the benefit of that one is when you're making some changes, that's actually going towards the future proofing of the technology. I think more and more merchants and the retailers would be looking at composability, but they would be looking at the benefit of a SaaS as well, so that they don't have to worry about all these hosting and upgrades and all these elements, but they really need those components. Again, I'm coming back, talk to each other and also have the flexibility. So that's what I think that 2024 would be like.
Thanks, Deepak. The future has to be flexible, but like you say, the systems have to talk to each other correctly. And let's be honest, like you say, cost optimization is so important in 2024, especially here in the UK. Take control of your tech debt, everyone, before it takes control of you. Next up, let's hear from Irem from Storyly, who's building on some of those themes from Deepak's answer.
First thing first, let me start with the obvious hygiene factor here, which is basically the rise of more unified and integrated platforms. So integrations between different tools and platforms in the tech stack are now actually table stakes, because the line between online and offline are as blurry as ever, and the shoppers can start online with inspiration, continue offline with consideration, and then go online again with the final purchase decision. And this is just one single scenario. So retailers and e-commerce marketers should think every step of their omnichannel touch points and ensure that they have different helpers to solve different problems and tap different opportunities in their tech stack. And these need to speak to each other to make life easier. So this is the hygiene factor. But what's beyond? So number one is to have shared history. What do I mean by this? You may have different champions for the tools in your stack, but the history of their strategies, use cases, and results should be accessible across teams, whether it be a simple Google Sheet or a nested Confluence document. Keeping historical track is not something you can do retrospectively. You need to document it starting from the moment that you start using that particular tool, so no one remains clueless when something changes in roles and any newcomer won't need to reinvent the wheel. And the second thing I would like to state is you need to consider automation at the center of all of your initiatives, but you need to also keep in mind these two caveats. When you decide to automate for efficiency, you always need to consider its impact as well as scalability. Though automation may sound like it is always for the sake of efficiency, it can take time and involve cumbersome iterations and cause inefficiencies, especially at the beginning. Therefore, I think assessing whether the impact of the outcome of automation would be significant or not is very much crucial here. So allow me to elaborate on this by an example from our own experiences. On a daily basis, we are communicating with dozens of e-commerce marketers, store owners, category managers, merchants, and we know that content creation on a personal level for their shoppers on their digital store is something that takes quite some time, but it is also of great importance for them for success. Especially for e-commerce businesses with high number of SKUs and a wide array of categories and options to choose from, this becomes even more complex. That's why scalable content through automation done with templates, AI, and so on can make a huge difference for them. And it does take time, of course, to adjust with time needed for learning and iteration when it comes to content. However, having a content creation system that can work with only adding your product feed to your system or having full screen product content created automatically for that product feed can significantly save up time and generate significant impact. Therefore, we see a lot of excitement built around automating content creation, for instance. Here you see automation done for the sake of impact in a scalable manner. So long story short, I would say don't automate just for efficiency, automate both for efficiency, impact, and scalability. And number three is ROI-focused tech investment. So there are tons of tools out there. Some might seem appetizing for e-commerce marketers, some others might be the must-have tools, and some others might be a really, really good nice to have. But you cannot buy all of this, so you should have some criteria for that. And my suggestion here is marketing efficiency ratio. How do individual tools in your MarTech stack affect your marketing efficiency ratio? It's all about revenue at the end of the day, right? So you need to keep an eye on the balance between the spending you make for the tools in your stack and their direct and incremental contribution to your revenue. So in a nutshell, this summarizes my top three tips for your tech stack optimization. Thank you.
Love those points. ROI, let's get clear on that. Shared histories. How much have we all shared the pain on that one? Why this tech? How are you using it? What's the plan? I bet that would make a huge difference in many a business. Automation. Time is such an important thing here, which automation gives you back. And the other thing about automation is it means things actually happen, like sales and marketing, without you having to do anything. Okay, we're going to pause now for a word from our lovely sponsors. Then we're going to build on Irem's automation theme with Jody from Brightpearl by Sage. So keep listening.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Welcome back. Let's continue our voyage of discovery to find out my guest's answers to this question. What is your top tip for tech stack optimization in 2024? Let's get deeper into automation now with Jody Guichard from Brightpearl by Sage.
Automation has become one of those, you know, really big buzzwords over the last few years, and rightly so, because in today's landscape, it's become really essential for businesses to integrate automation tools into their daily operations. However, it's not just about adopting the latest tech, it's about ensuring that automation aligns with your business goals and your processes. So whether you're harnessing built-in functionalities with platforms like Shopify or employing specialized tools like Gorgeous or Klaviyo or Brightpearl, the key is to integrate automation strategically so you can really optimize productivity, save time and save cash. So first things first, you should identify those tasks in your operations that could really benefit from automation. Look for those repetitive, time-consuming and error-prone tasks that could really use a helping hand. These are the areas where you're really going to see a difference. I would say some good areas to start could be inventory management, order processing, shipping, or even things like email and SMS marketing or customer service. You should also keep an eye on your automation efforts as well, because technology does move really fast. So your automation strategy needs to keep up with that. Regularly check how things are going, find areas to improve and tweak your tech stack as needed. In a nutshell, tech stack optimization in 2024 isn't just about adopting automation. It's about integrating it smartly to amp up efficiency, save money, and make your products and services even better. With a thoughtful and smart approach to automation, businesses can really stay ahead of the game and thrive within, you know, today's ever-changing markets.
Do it smarter and thrive. Thank you, Jody. Love that answer. Okay, it's time for our final guest, and then I'm going to share my takeaways from all this great advice. Welcome, Chris McCarthy-Stott from Push On.
I'm personally a fan of the less is more mantra. And when auditing tech stacks at Push On, we often find that a lot of people have bought the latest tech, but never actually utilising the tools to their fullest potential. It means that over time, your tech stack's getting bloated with stuff that you're really not using, and it's probably costing you additional money in subscriptions outside of your tech stack. In these situations, I advise clients to complete a gap analysis on what their tech stack's capable of, how much they're utilizing, and what benefits each area is bringing to the organization. After that, anything that you find isn't actually being used, I recommend that it's removed if possible. I know it's tempting to think, we'll get round to utilising this, we should keep it, but you got to ask yourself the question, what's going to change over the next 12 months that's going to allow you to utilise that tool? Are you actually going to be hiring another person, for example, if you're overloaded and that's the reason why you've not been utilising the product? If the answer is no, then I recommend, again, removing it. We also see a lot of custom solutions being developed. These are often to handle minor edge cases, whereas if you're prepared to be a little bit flexible, a platform's out-of-the-box feature set might cover 99% of your use cases. So when we're auditing custom or complex solutions, especially those covering minor edge cases, we ask the question, if you made some minor business change, could this be achieved with a simpler tool? Or potentially, can we look at upskilling your team to negate the need for this entirely? If so, in that example, I'd be investing the human capital and simplifying my tech stack.
Thanks for that, Chris. A great way to round off our expert answers. So what are my takeaways from all of this? Well, first, that if tech stack optimization wasn't on your to-do list for 2024, I cannot believe you've listened to all this and haven't now put it on your to-do list for 2024. There is so much to be gained: cost savings, time savings, speeding up delivery of projects and improvements to the business if you choose the right route to go down, plus better customer experience leading to better customer retention and higher margins. It's a no-brainer. There's also a lot to be considered, though. A quick look at any e-commerce tech stack would give you, I reckon, at least 100 things you could optimize. But as always, success is going to lie with decisions you make to decide what you should do of all of those things that you could do. So spend the time doing the audit. You've heard multiple ways of doing that during this episode, and making the right decisions on what you should be improving. Outsourcing is your friend? Probably. Case for self-build is probably not there anymore, one could argue. But if you've done your audit and you've done your proper decision process, then you'll work out the right answer for you. And like Deepak and others were saying, what's the best way to solve this problem? Is it to go bespoke? Is it to sacrifice some functionality to do it quickly out of the box? There's a lot to consider for improving what you've already got, making more of what you've already got, and also looking forward to future plans. And finally, for me, I think probably the best thing you can do for the quickest wins is to look at what tools you've already got and what you're not using that you're paying for, either to cancel it or to make use of it in order to improve things in the business. You can get your hands on the notes in this episode, head over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast or use our direct episode short links. That's when you put ECMP, short for ecommercemasterplan.info/episode number into the URL bar. So ecmp.info/whatever the number of this episode is, put that in the URL bar and you'll go straight to the correct page on the website. With nearly 500 episodes now, there's a lot of pages on that website, so you may find that short link tool very useful. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business, like our e-commerce explored webinar series where we debate many of the hot topics in e-commerce. If you liked this episode, then make sure you check out episode 474, which is another multi-guest mashup where my guests are sharing their overall top tip for success in 2024. Or if you want more tech, then we did one all about AI last year. That's episode 451. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan. It's awesome to have you listening. And I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners just like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.